Skip the waiting room. TireRack.com now offers convenient mobile tire installation in select areas. Simply shop TireRack.com for your next set of tires, and at checkout, choose Tire Rack Mobile Tire Installation. An expertly trained technician will arrive with your tires and install them on site, at home, at the office, wherever you are. You'll spend less time waiting and more time doing the things you enjoy. TireRack.com, the way tire buying should be.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's S-A-U-C-O-N-Y.com.
Hello and welcome back to Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at D1Baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined this week by Cokie Riley of The Advocate, NOLA.com, to talk LSU baseball. A lot to talk about with the Tigers so far this season.
There always is.
It's always plenty to talk about for good and for bad this year. There's some of each. So we will dive in and talk about some detailed stuff there. But first, I have to let you know that this episode of Highway to Hoover and every episode of Highway to Hoover is brought to you by PitchLogic, the system used by players, coaches, scouts, and instructors at all levels of play, from youth leagues to the big leagues. The easy-to-use and affordable technology makes the platform accessible to every player at every level. All the metrics and features used at the highest level. See pitchlogic.com for more information. Cokie, first off, I appreciate you joining us today to talk about the Tigers.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much for having me on. This is a real pleasure.
Let's start in the obvious place, and that's with orange juice. You tweeted yesterday, or I saw you tweet, Jay Johnson on his radio show, said that after Saturday's loss to Florida, that he was up at 4 a.m. drinking orange juice and looking at the moon, which is a very emo thing to say. But do you think the orange juice was metaphorical because they were playing Florida?
I would say that it was metaphorical, but I will say, like, Leah Van, who had this position before the last two seasons before me, said that, heard somewhere that he actually loves orange juice and he's not really a big drinker. So I think it was actually orange juice. Okay. I need to investigate this a little bit more. And obviously this happened just yesterday. It's not like it didn't happen at a press conference either. It was at his radio show. So I'll get back to you on that one. But apparently he does like orange juice, at least according to Leo.
Yeah, fair enough. Hopefully he did not brush his teeth soon before or after. That's obviously a terrible combination there. If it was at 4 a.m., though, you know, who knows? What do you make, Cokie, of the first two weekends of SEC play for LSU? That's obviously a broad question, but take that any way you'd like.
It's not only is it a broad question, it's kind of a loaded question with this team, because there's a bunch of ways you can look at it. And I think when you boil everything down, I'd say the part that I guess is like the most surprising or the most concerning, depending on how you want to take it, is the bullpen. And they've had a couple good moments here and there. I think Friday's game, when Griffin Herring came in and threw three scoreless innings, that was great. I think the one out they got in the sixth and the seventh and the eighth inning, I'd say, and on Saturday against Florida, they looked pretty good. Got some bad luck, and that ended up them allowing a run, which ended up being absolutely crucial in that game, because, you know, Ackenhauser gives up the run the ninth, they go to extra innings, they lose the game, right? So, the ability is there, right? Like, obviously the talent is there for them to get better, but they have a 10.57 ERA in six SEC games. Like, that's not going to cut it. Either way you look at it, that's just not going to cut it. And we were just talking about Jay Johnson's radio show, and he said yesterday that, you know, in their four SEC losses, the bullpen just hasn't been very good. And it's hard to, you know, slice it any other way. And until that improves, it's going to be hard to see this team totally getting to where it's going to get. And but I guess the good news is that they have the talent to fix it. And I mentioned those two instances where they actually pitched fairly well when it comes to their bullpen. And when it comes to the talent, like, you know, you have Gavin Guidry, you have Nate Ackenhausen, you have Griffin Herring, all guys who performed in Omaha. And then you have, you know, guys behind those guys who either we've seen flashes of a good play, like a Fidel Ulloa, or, you know, guys who obviously are talented, like Cade Anderson or Cam Johnson, who they're trying to work into more of a weekend mix out of the bullpen. So we can go into more detail when it comes to that, when it comes to all that stuff. But if I had to boil everything down, that's probably the best way I could boil it down.
What do you, other than the obvious answer of they're pitching poorly, what do you see as the issues in the bullpen? Like what was expected to go right that has not gone right so far, would you say?
You kind of have to go down guy to guy. And some of this is small sample size because they were so good in the non-conference play that, you know, maybe some of this is just noise. And some bad at ball luck. And if you look at some of the advanced metrics over at d1baseball.com, you do see some of that reflected in the Sierra and the FIP numbers. Right. And I can use those, you know, those big terms on a podcast like this, which is nice.
Okay, yeah. Bring it on. We appreciate it.
But at the same time, like they walked too many guys against Mississippi State. I think they had 10 or 11 walks in the 11 and a third innings that they threw against those guys. And they gave up too many home runs against Florida this past weekend. So it was kind of two different problems melded into one bigger problem, which is what we've seen through six games. I'm actually working on a big story about the bullpen, what's gone right and what's gone wrong. What's gone right is Griffin Herring. And what's gone wrong is, I guess, maybe you could argue some of the management with the bullpen in terms of leaving Nate Ackenhausen and leaving him in and letting him face the line, having him go through Florida's lineup twice in that Saturday game in particular. And the reason why I keep on going back to that Saturday game is because, like, they win that game, they win the series, and we're not having, I guess, even a slightly negative slant on this conversation. We're saying, oh, they've turned things around a little bit. They just beat a top 10 team in a big series, and they have, you know, some juice heading into this weekend against Arkansas. Now that's not the case. Now we're saying, you know, 2-14, what's wrong with the bullpen, yada yada yada, right? So that game really changed the way we look at this team, and I feel like that's fair, because I mean, they were also a few pitches away or a few bad things away from being 1-5 in SEC play because of that crazy, you know, Saturday game against Mississippi State. So I think part of it's just, you know, guys not quite living up to their potential for one reason or other outside of, I guess, Griffin Herring. And some of it's bad luck with the Ackenhausen situation. But, you know, you just like to see – I think Cam Johnson's like a good example of this, where, you know, that guy should probably be in the major leagues right now in terms of just pure talent. And yet he's had trouble throwing strikes. Cade Anderson, who was, you know, fantastic in these midweek games as a starter, it just hasn't translated out of the bullpen. And, you know, life's tough in the SEC. And unfortunately he's had he's kind of had to learn that at first, at least. Javon Coleman is another guy who might just be better off as a starter. And they kind of viewed him as a starter during it when the season first started. And now, they're using him, I guess, more of in a bullpen role. And that depth isn't quite there that you wanted to be there. Like Will Helmers has been pushed up, for example, and that's a guy who didn't pitch almost at all last season. So I think they could throw you Ulloa more and at least see how that goes. He's only thrown two pitches in SEC play, and that's despite the fact that he was excellent in the non-conference play. So that's a little bit surprising. But, you know, like, you'd like to throw Gavin Guidry more than an inning or an inning in a third, but I don't know if they necessarily trust him to do that. So, again, like, when you start, you know, picking nits here and picking nits there, things start to fall apart a little bit, and you combine that with the walks, you combine it with the home runs from this past weekend, and things are just sort of, you know, stacking up on each other. But I can also make the case that it's early and they had the talent to fix it and they had the coaching staff to fix it. So, you know, maybe I'm just overreacting here, I guess.
I mean, two things can be true. You know, you can look at some of the problems they've had and say that there were better expectations, and also feel optimistic that, like, look, they'll find the right combinations. And it struck me, I saw you tweet, you know, about the Southeastern game, the Tuesday game. And I should say, for those listening, Koki and I are recording this before that game. So if something crazy happens in that game and we're not addressing it, that's why, just so you know. But, you know, guys like Aiden Moffitt, Cam Johnson, and Micah Bucknum are going to pitch, which tells me that, like, hey, they're going to use this game as an audition of sorts of, like, hey,
yeah,
who wants innings on the weekend? Cause they're available. Like, you know, show us what you got. So now the good news, as we pivot a little bit, is the rotation by and large has been very good. So to what extent have Holman and Jump in particular, maybe even exceeded some expectations in terms of Holman looks like he's that one tough start aside against State, has largely looked like a guy who's ready to be a real Friday guy, and Gage Jump, considering, you know, how little he'd really pitched in his college career, I have to imagine they've been pleased with the way he's come along.
With Holman, it's the command, and it's, especially it's the command with the fastball, and he keeps that pitch up. And it's a little bit similar to the Ty Floyd thing, where it's got a pretty good spin rate to it, and keep that thing up with the induced vertical break. And he plays that off with his slider, which is a pitch that, I mean, the effectiveness of the slider has gone a long way in how good he is in his starts. And it was very good against Florida. And you had that 1-2 combination, throwing a couple curveballs there. Even as a splitter, I feel like he wants to use more, but he hasn't used a lot. He actually got a strikeout with it this past weekend. And you kind of combine all that with his really good command, and you get a guy who, I guess you could argue, is even overperforming compared to what his stuff actually is. He just, you know, locates the ball really well. He's a professional pitcher. In a college sense, sorry, he's a professional college pitcher. Yeah, I know that's like an oxymoron, but it makes sense if you watch him pitch. And then with Gage Jump, the stuff's just really good, and the fastball's got some good life to it. Did a really good job of locating it up in the zone again against Florida. They had a lot of success with, you know, throwing fastballs up in the zone and then playing that off with a breaking ball, usually on the outer half, low and in the outer half. So with the kind of when they had success this past weekend, that's kind of what they were doing. And that plays into their strengths. And it also kind of played into the Florida's weaknesses. And we saw that a lot. We saw that, you know, in the College World Series last year when they faced Ty Floyd, and Ty Floyd had 17 strikeouts, and obviously Ty Floyd's the king of the high fastball. But I think, you know, obviously no offense to Ty, he was an excellent pitcher at LSU, but I think Gage and Luke probably have better like off-speed stuff to go along with the fastball. So especially with Gage, and I think his curveball and slider, especially his slider was particularly on against Florida. And I mean, those off-speed pitches have been pretty deadly against opponents. And for the most part, they've done a good job of throwing strikes. They had they had some issues this weekend of finishing off at bats, getting ahead in counts. The one time Gage gave up runs this past weekend was an inning where he walked three batters in a row, and the last two batters he was up in the count 1-2-0-2 and just couldn't finish them off. So that was like kind of a slight issue that he had, but really for the most part that's like picking nits, to be honest, because he still went 5 2/3 and only gave up two runs against a really good team. And when you're getting a performance like that, you should be winning games, which is kind of what made Saturday's game. I keep on going back to Saturday's game. So crushing for them.
And then I think one of the other benefits of what Holman and Jump have done, right, is that then you have Thatcher on Sundays, and I'm sure you do. You get asked all the time. I know when I go on Baton Rouge Radio Weekly, I get asked about Thatcher Hurd all the time. He's a little bit of a polarizing figure the last couple of years for whatever reason. But I think honestly, okay, his ERA is 7.09. That's not great. I'm not going to sit here and argue with you about that. But the peripherals are mostly okay. Like, he's not walking a ton of guys. He still misses bats. The batting average against is high, but it's not astronomical. And more than anything else is just that the number of teams, even in the SEC, that have a Sunday starter they really like is really small. There's a lot of TBAs in this league on Sunday. And so for what it is, and having adjusted our expectations for what Thatcher Hurd can be, I think you'll take what he's given you on Sunday. And some of its usage too, like last Sunday against Florida, you know, he was fine for the first few innings, and it just like he just went, you know, a couple batters too long, right? And that just happens sometimes, and it can make your numbers look worse than they actually were. So I say all that to say, I'm a little bit, I wonder if you are too, a little bit of a Thatcher Hurd apologist at this point, because I think for the role he's in right now, like, he's fine. The stuff is good. He misses bats. He doesn't walk guys. Like, he gives you a chance. Is it disappointing that he hasn't been developed into the kind of Friday guy they thought he might be? Sure. But if we can deal with reality on reality's terms, I think in his role right now, he's pretty well suited for it.
Yeah. I think a lot of LSU fans are, you know, freaking out at the fact that, you know, he hasn't taken built off of that excellent end of to last season. But I guess kind of to your point, out of all the pitchers, maybe in college baseball, that you'd want to see in like a full 162 game sample, he's probably number one, because it's like, if he pitched an entire, you know, 6 month season, what would his numbers look like? It would probably look pretty good after, because, you know, some of the luck stuff would even out, and some of the two out stuff and the batted in the batted ball stuff would even out, because again, like, he's throwing strikes better than he did last year. Last year, the issue was strike throwing, and that's probably one of the reasons why the numbers were so volatile, at least to start the year. And he would have innings where he'd be walking too many guys, and to compensate that, he was throwing right over the plate. This year, that's not really been the problem. He hasn't really walked that many guys, and the stuff's still there. He's getting a good amount of swings and misses, and even though I think he only had like three strikeouts this past weekend, but for the most part, he's getting swings and misses. It's just the one big inning. Like, that's the issue. And you mentioned the runs that he gave up this past weekend. Like, you know, he gives up a 2-run home run to Shelton with one out. And I think it's reasonable to say he let him finish the inning. You know, it's only the fifth. You're only down 2-1. Their bullpen was, you know, it was pretty well stocked to be fair, up to that point. But at the same time, like, he had thrown four scoreless innings before that, and I don't think his pitch count was too crazy. So I don't think it was crazy to say, let him finish the inning. And he got two outs, he got another out, and that's when the rest of the runs came. So, and he couldn't finish the inning. So it's just, it with him, it's just, you know, eliminating that one huge inning. And I'm not 100% sure why it happens. I mean, maybe some of it is the bad luck stuff that we're talking about, and you can kind of see that in the peripherals. But if he can fix that, then I think he'll be fine. But if he can't fix that, then I think we might continue seeing, I guess, somewhat similar stuff to that. And I think the point that's been kind of underemphasized, and this might be a good segue, is they need to score more runs on Sundays, because Sundays are when you score runs in college baseball, right? Typically. You've been doing this longer than I have, but I feel like that's how this works. And
that is correct. Yes. You're right.
They scored four or five runs last Sunday against Mississippi State, and they scored two this past Sunday. Like, that's not going to cut it. So until that changes, they're going to have trouble winning on Sundays. So I think that's probably a good segue into the offense if you want to get there.
Yeah, for sure. Well done. Pro move there by Cookie Riley. smooth segue. I actually want to start offensively with a bit of a philosophical question. Was Tommy White actually struggling, or is it just that we have such a high standard for his performance that we're comparing him to Charlie Condon, who's like going nuclear in Athens, or whoever, like Jack Caglione? So to what extent was he actually kind of struggling and now he's breaking out of it? Or do you think it was a little bit of a function of maybe just expectations being set where they were, and maybe, maybe it was a little bit unfair?
I think it's a little bit of both, but given that he did what he did last season hurt, and now that he's healthy, I think it was a reasonable expectation to say that he should have been, you know, better. or this at least this past weekend, especially because the state weekend was fantastic. Like, he was the best player on the team, and as he played up to standard and above that, because he was playing really good defense, and he continued to play very good defense this weekend too. But especially last weekend. But then this past weekend, I think he had one hit, and it's hard to win the series when your best player is one hit. I understand things are harder for him without Dylan. And I think you can chalk up to a lot of the, like, the non-conference stuff. I guess the okay hitting, the okayness that he was in the non-conference to rust, because he sat out for 6.5 months after the season with shoulder surgery. If, you know, your listeners didn't know that, that's what happened. So it was, I think a lot of it was rust based, you know, being overly aggressive on breaking stuff outside and sort of like rolling over a lot of stuff. Having some trouble with, you know, velocity up in the zone, like those sort of things you can kind of attribute to rust. But I think this past weekend, everyone's allowed to have a bad weekend. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not like sounding alarm bells, like Tommy White's done at the plate or anything. No, that's not what I'm saying, but it's harder. It's gonna be harder for this team to win games if he's, you know, going whole weekends with one hit. So, and you don't have a guy like Dylan anymore. So it's just, it's harder. He has to, I guess, be more consistent. I know that sounds very harsh, but it's kind of true, because just because of the state of where the rest of their offense is at, and he's got to stop rolling over on balls outside. He's got to be a little bit more patient, even though I think he did have one or two walks this weekend, which is, I guess, a slight step forward for him. And I guess like the hard stuff up, is something that he's going to have to answer, not just for, you know, schmokes like you and I, but for the scouts who are watching. So, I think overall he'll be fine, and, he's going to have, you know, big weekends throughout the rest of the season. And I don't think anything's like actually wrong with him, but I do have some notes. I guess that's the best way to put it.
Yeah, fair enough.
Hey everyone, we're going to take a quick break from our discussion to hear a couple ads from our sponsors.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Experience the joy of running in the new Triumph 22 from Saucony, the original running brand. Stacked with luxury foam cushioning, Triumph 22 turns miles into smiles with the ultimate blend of comfort and energy return. Shop Triumph 22 at Saucony.com. That's Saucony.com.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on. And if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
Meet Janice. Unfortunately, her thing is sneeze attacks every time spring returns.
I literally sneezed 40 times in a row once.
Luckily for Janice, at the Walmart pharmacy, she can get over-the-counter allergy relief for things like sneezing, runny nose, and watery eyes fast with online pickup or delivery.
No more suffering? That's nothing to sneeze at.
I see what you did there. Help survive allergy season with fast online pickup or delivery from Walmart. Welcome to an easier pharmacy. Welcome to your Walmart.
Let's play a little bit of a hypothetical game. Let's say we look up in May, you and I are in Hoover, and LSU's offense turn the corner, and hey, this is a high functioning offense, top half of the SEC, top third of the SEC, maybe. what are some of the positive things you've seen from this lineup so far that you can extrapolate out and say that was probably part of why this offense turned the corner?
Jared Jones continuing to do what he does, what he's doing. Mac Bingham, you know, continuing to take, I guess, small steps towards, I don't want to say like getting used to SEC play because he's such a veteran player already, but, you know, kind of getting to the level of production they thought they were going to get from him. He had 360 last season. Right now he's around like 280. But he's, you know, got a little bit more to his pull side power this weekend with a big home run. So that's key for him. They need him desperately with the way that Paxton's been struggling. But I kind of said before the season that Jared Jones, Brady Neal, and Paxton Kling kind of had to take step forwards this season for this offense to be not at the level of last season. I don't think anyone could have reasonably expected them to be at that level, you know, like best offense in the country level. But, you know, good enough to where you can complement that with a really good starting staff and win a lot of games and make it to Omaha, right? Right now, really only one of those three guys have clearly taken that step forward. We've seen flashes from Brady Neal. We've seen like some really good moments, but pretty much all of that's been in non-conference play. You want to see that in conference play. And that's asking a lot from a guy who really should be a freshman when he's a sophomore. But it's just the reality of how this team is set up. So like Josh Pearson's been solid for them. Hayden Draminski's been solid for them. They've been more or less what you would at the very least expect, even though I guess maybe you wanted to see maybe a step forward from those guys with an extra year of experience. But they've been rocks. They've been solid, right? So I don't think you can be disappointed in them really at all. It's those three guys that I mentioned. And I think Jared's taken a real step forward. He's taken much better bats as the season has gone along. He's looked better in conference play than probably even did in non-conference play. He leads the team in home runs. He has 10 homers. And he's hitting the ball hard, not just pull side, but it's the opposite way too. He's hit some bombs the other way. So his fieriness aside, he's been a real step forward for them at the plate. But Paxton's really, really scuffling right now. That's an issue for them. And Brady needs to find some of the magic that he had in non-conference play and translate it to conference play. Those are kind of the two keys for them offensively. And if they can get that fixed, then this offense, I think, the outlook's a lot brighter for them offensively. But you've seen some step forwards from guys like Michael Braswell, who's just been pretty steady at the plate, you know, a lot of 1-for-3 games, a walk here and there. Not a lot to complain about there. He's been probably better at the plate than he looked at South Carolina. And then I mentioned Hayden, I mentioned Josh. So, I mean, I think the offense has been a little bit better than the outlook may have been after non-conference play when they were having trouble getting more than 2 runs against Xavier. But it's not perfect either. And I don't think it's going to be perfect anytime soon just because of how young they are and how many guys that they're having to push up and how they had to push up and, all these things that you just kind of expected. They're just going to be up and down for the rest of the season. And that's why, again, the bullpen is so important for them and the starting rotation is so important for them because it's just so hard for them to win games. Because it's going to be hard for them to win games because of their offense.
Final question for you. This stretch of the season is extremely tough. I mean, you're coming off of the weekend you were against Florida. Now you've got Arkansas on the road, which is probably the single toughest test you can have in SEC play, at least based on what we've seen. Mm. You follow that up with Vanderbilt. Now that's at home, and I saw Vanderbilt in person last weekend, and I don't know what to make of that. So who knows? But certainly you're going to see a very talented pitching staff against that offense. So regardless, though, I know when I've talked to Jay Johnson leading up to the season, like he was very focused on that early portion of the SEC schedule and just kind of surviving it.
Yeah.
How much was that kind of still a talking point about just kind of muddling through this, for lack of a better way of putting it? Let's just get on the other side of this with our heads above water and then see what we can do beyond that point.
Yeah, I think that's going to be like a big key for them because I don't think it's been as much of a talking point because I feel like with Jay Johnson, every game is a tough game. Every game is, you know, a playoff game. That's how he describes it to his team. Like, you know, like stuff that you would you expect to hear from a coach like him. So with that said, I look at the schedule, and if they can be around 500 through this stretch, they'll probably be fine, because the second half of the SEC schedule isn't as difficult. They've got Missouri, for example, on there. No offense to Missouri. They're probably the bottom of the conference right now. And then, you know, there's going to be some tough weekends in there. Like, you know, Alabama isn't a pushover. Ole Miss has looked much better this season. Auburn is not terrible, at least. And A&M's on there too. And that's going to be as difficult as almost anything they face through these first few weeks, but that's a lot more manageable than, you know, an improved Mississippi State team. And then, a 4-week gauntlet of Florida, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and Tennessee. Like, that's tough. That's a tough draw. Back to back to back to back. So, if they can survive that and be around 500, not even saying be 500, around 500, you know, maybe a game or two off, then they'll probably be fine by the end of this. You know, they just, it's just, that's why, again, that's why Saturday's game was so important, because if they were at 500 heading into this weekend, they could survive just losing 2 out of 3, because if they lose 2 out of 3, and I think that's what most people expect, then that's 3-6, and that's tough. And then 3-6, and then you're playing a Vanderbilt team that, you know, it has the talent to beat you even if you're at home, and it just gets really tough for them. And that's when you're really trying to swim upstream, even though this is a team that's built to be better as the year goes along, because they're a younger team. So it just makes hosting a super regional potentially down the line a lot tougher. It makes even hosting a regional tougher. I think this team has, this is an odd team, because I feel like they're, you know, the opposite of last year's team in the way that they're constructed to try to win games. And I think Jay Johnson's hinted at that a few times. And I also think they're more talented than the team 2 years ago, which is Jay Johnson's first team, when, you know, they lost in the regional, the Southern Miss. So they're probably somewhere in between. It's just a matter of the extreme of last year, when they were this, you know, the Beatles basically. And you know, the struggles of the team 2 years ago, they're somewhere in between that. It's just a matter of figuring out where they are exactly in that pendulum.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting to watch as the season goes on. And one of the beauties or drawbacks, depending on how you look at it, is we know the math in SEC play. You know, the magic number to make sure you're in the field is, you know, you get to like 14 in the regular season. If you get to 16, you're talking about hosting. If you get to about 18, you're talking about national seed kind of stuff. So, I mean, the numbers are just all there, and we can kind of play, you know, amateur mathematicians the rest of the way. So, fascinating team to watch, just because I think it's such a different team than last year, as you've mentioned. And but the expectation doesn't go anywhere, because it's LSU baseball. Yeah. And that is one of the beauties of it. You know, that high level of expectation makes them fascinating all the time. So,
I think with the expectations, it's like, they're not, I don't think anyone's expecting them to, like, you have to win the national title again, or else the season's a failure. Like, I'll say that, like, that was more of last year. Like, last year was like, if you don't win the whole thing, then you just wasted this Paul Skeen season. You just wasted this Dylan Crews season. Like, that tension was just there. This year, it's not that. It's more of like, get to Omaha, and that's a success. Like, that's kind of the way the season's kind of being looked at. And I feel like that's fair, just given the amount of talent that they have on the roster, just period. So, we'll see.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's about right. Well, Cokie, I appreciate you joining us today. Good to catch up again. Cokie Riley of The Advocate, NOLA.com. You can also follow him on social media at Cokie Riley. That's KOKIRILEY. Kind of rhymes there. So Cokie, I appreciate you joining us today.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This is a real pleasure.
That's going to do it for this edition of Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at D1 Baseball. I want to thank once again Cokie Riley for joining me. I want to thank PitchLogic for sponsoring this and every episode of Highway to Hoover. And I want to thank you, the listeners, for listening. We'll talk to y'all.
The Highway to Hoover podcast is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on. And if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.